Hello and welcome to the Grow VC, Everyone Funding Startups podcast. I'm your new host, Brett Bivens, and I'm excited to be taking the reins from Marcus. I'm also excited to have with us today Carl Esposti, founder of crowdsourcing.org, which is just a great resource for any and all information regarding the crowdsourcing industry. So, Carl, thanks a lot for being with us today.
My pleasure, Brett. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too. And I thought maybe we could start off by just having you give an introduction and kind of background about yourself and about crowdsourcing.org and where that all came from.
Yes, certainly. So I've spent about 25 years in sort of everything sourcing. So my background is working as a management consultant for many years and working for some of the top global service providers, working with organizations looking at different sourcing models. So those models would include things like offshore models and captive models and outsourcing models. So a few years ago, I had the good fortune to recognize that crowdsourcing was starting to materialize as a pretty relevant model and saw its potential as being disruptive both to sort of the public sector, the private sector, and individuals as they thought about ways of growing and organizing their business. So with that in mind, I recognized that I needed a way of tracking what was going on within the market, and there wasn't a central source of information. So we invested in an idea to build crowdsourcing.org to really provide that sort of central portal. So, anything you want to know in terms of who's using it, what are the best practices, what are the user case studies, and who are the providers could be sourced in one central location. So we launched our site about a year ago. And the sort of agenda behind our business model is sort of news and topical interest in terms of what's going on in the world of crowdsourcing. Obviously, crowdfunding is a very important element of that. We've defined about five different fundamental models in terms of how crowdsourcing can be used. Crowdfunding is obviously one of the important ones. We also established the fact that many people are using crowdsourcing as a way of accessing distributed labor groups. Another application is that around sort of distributed knowledge, finding and organizing information. There are many tools that are available through crowdsourcing. So we have a specific focus as well in terms of the different platforms and solutions that can be arranged through crowdsourcing as well.
Great, and I think it's incredible how much in just the recent years crowdsourcing in general has changed the way people go about running their businesses and starting their businesses, and now more recently crowdfunding specifically. So you mentioned that you track the market and your website's focused on that. What do you feel has been really the impetus behind the quick growth of crowdfunding in so many markets around the world? Because I know here in the United States, in terms of public consciousness, it's a very new thing, and it's still, there's still a lot of people that really are not aware of it yet.
Well, when we look at crowdfunding, I mean, there are clearly different types of models within crowdfunding itself. So, we've done a lot of work in terms of sort of trying to define the taxonomy for the industry, and that's across the different applications of crowdsourcing and crowdfunding. And when we look at crowdfunding, we've identified there are three fundamental different models. The first we talk about is that of donations, philanthropy, and sponsorship. So these are crowdfunding models and crowdfunding platforms that involve people requesting contributions, reaching an audience of potential investors, potential affiliates from the point of view of sort of supporting their cause in response, the people donating obviously get sort of tokens of appreciation. They may get mentioned. They may get gifts or as I said, tokens associated with what's been produced through these different sites. The second is the investment model. The investment model is where obviously somebody requesting the funds makes a pledge to provide the returns with a given level of interest. And then obviously the third model is that of the investment-based models. Those investment-based models include revenue share, profit share, and obviously the equity models that are starting to materialize.
Yeah, and going to your last point about the equity-based models, can you talk a little bit about where that type of crowdfunding stands in the United States in terms of government and regulation? And then maybe also touch on why other countries like the Netherlands, for example, have been so much quicker in letting that happen in their markets.
Well, you know, the interesting thing will be obviously, you know, how much this crowdfunding market scales. I mean, there's obviously a lot of issues to be considered, you know, regarding this. I mean, a number of the sites that have attracted the highest profile at the moment, you know, obviously the Kickstarters and the Indiegogos and the Grovey Seas and companies of that nature, are all trying to sort of push the boundaries in terms of where this can go. So obviously, as I mentioned before, that you know the models that you know that involve you know an association or you know, an association between sort of fundraisers and contributors that don't require formal contracts and don't require you know information to be shared around the sort of financial structures of these organisations you know have some potential. But the really interesting thing is obviously the extent to which crowdfunding can be used as a way of accessing, you know, people and raising funds for sort of more investments in terms of sort of seed or growth money. You know, outside the US, certainly, you know, particularly with companies like Simbid in the Netherlands and Crowdcube in the UK, they've been able to develop models that actually do not need to be regulated. So, for example, in Holland, the model that they've adopted is that a cooperative organisation is set up, which becomes basically a vehicle to facilitate the transaction between the contributors and the ultimate beneficiary of these funds. Simbid does not provide sort of financial investment advice, and therefore, just as acting in the role of sort of facilitator, in order to be able to sort of matchmake the contributors to the requesters, they actually avoid regulation. So I know that they have socialized their model. They've had there's been a tremendous amount of diligence regarding their model, and therefore you know they've been able to embrace that and get that going. But it's still very early days. And I know Crowdcube in the UK, for example, have now successfully funded two ventures through their equity-based crowdfunding model. I think they've raised £75,000 for one venture and then £25,000 for another. So, again, early stages, but on the way to creating a very interesting and different model for fundraising.
Now, could you talk a little bit about the regulation and where that stands in the United States, and then maybe what we can expect in the future going forward?
Well, there's clearly been, you know, there's clearly been made some inroads being made in terms of, you know, in terms of where this stands. I mean, various petitions have been made, and obviously recently in the American Employment Act, the America's Jobs Act, there was, you know, allusion made to the fact that it was recognised that the regulations maybe needed to be lifted, maybe certain exemptions needed to be allowed to allow companies to raise money in a different way. So I think the moves are on in terms of the relaxation of that market. Obviously, it'll take some time in terms of seeing exactly where that's going. But I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure both from the platform owners and potential investors, as well as the people obviously seeking to raise funds. So again, you know, a big body and a big movement towards that, but certainly as a way of freeing up investment and creating a sort of new capital market for smaller organizations, it's something that over the next few years probably will start making headway.
Right. Yeah, and it's obviously a slow kind of long-term process with anything of that scale, but it is exciting to kind of hear that the wheels are turning on that, and that hopefully sometime in the near future we'll be able to experience this in the United States.
Certainly.
Yep. Now, another question. We have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast, and so I'm curious, just cause as an expert in the industry, what can these entrepreneurs and these companies do to make themselves attractive to the crowd in terms of gaining investment from the crowd? And does this differ at all from kind of what brings success when they're seeking more traditional investments like angel and VC money?
I mean, I think the thing, obviously, you know, one of the issues with crowdfunding as a model, and this is something that, you know, we as an industry have to work through and then platform owners have to work through, is obviously, you know, it's incredibly appealing to people that are raising money. So it's very easy. It's very easy for these sites to attract a lot of people that are happy to present their proposals, you know, regarding the money they request and what they plan to do with this money. One of the issues is obviously the contractual obligation or the financial obligation, that the relationship that exists between the person donating the money and the person receiving the money is not typically governed by the platform owner, and therefore. There's a lot of good faith, basically, that's put on the person raising the money to be both transparent in terms of where that money is invested, what the plans are for that money, and then obviously once the funds have been raised, exactly what happens in terms of the communication and the, you know, the transparency that avails subsequently. So obviously, in order for this to be a sort of sustainable model, you know, both individuals and platform owners need to develop processes and tools in order to be able to allow the investment community to feel confident transparent regarding how these funds and things are being invested. So I think there are some very different things that are consistent with raising money through these mechanisms. You have to engage your audience in a very different way. You have to be a lot more open about things that are going on in the organization. You have to be clear about your strategy. You have to be more open in terms of providing good reporting. And I think those entrepreneurs that establish that type of dialogue and that type of communication, either through the sites, if the sites provide the facilities and tools in order for that to happen, or through their own systems or their own social media networks, or through their own collaboration tools, to continue that engagement with the investors beyond the point of the initial campaign. So I think the means by which the people requesting the money intend to maintain and develop those relationships, I think, is going to be pretty fundamental to investors' ability to raise that money.
And I guess kind of a follow-up question to that, when these companies and these entrepreneurs do have success crowdfunding, whether it's equity-based or whether it's on a different platform that's more of a donation type of setting, how have you seen going forward after that their ability to raise money through other channels like angel investors and VCs? Have they kind of been more successful, or has it made a big impact on them?
I don't know if I can honestly answer that. I've been very close in terms of tracking the metrics around the success people have been having raising money from a crowdfunding point of view. I mean, some of the practices around that are pretty interesting. You know, in terms of the numbers of conversion rates, how many companies actually reach the goals that they're looking for? At what point is the sort of the tipping point in terms of raising money, when, you know, you move from the point of view of people in your closer network providing money versus strangers? Understand that, you know, the first 30-40% of that money typically comes through the close network. And at that point, it's more likely that people that don't know you start contributing money because of a level of confidence that's been raised regarding the fact that there are other donors. You know, how that pertains to the subsequent effect of raising money through other sources, I mean, I would have thought intuitively that was more of a function of how the entrepreneur had been able to demonstrate the application of those funds, you know, what their business plan was like, you know, the integrity of their model. I would have thought that had a much greater impact than their ability to raise funds through some of these crowdfunding mechanisms. I suspect that if they've been able to raise funds and they've been able to show subsequent investors that they've been able to both execute a program, maintain and manage a relationship with the people that have donated and protected those people as future investors, and spent that money wisely and created an entity and an asset that was growing in a healthy manner, then clearly that would stand them in good stead.
Absolutely. I think that's totally correct. And obviously, going forward, as this becomes more prevalent way to raise money for companies, we'll probably have more information and data on that. But I think you're absolutely right with what you just said. Kind of maybe to kind of end this interview, Crowd Conference 2011 is something that you run, and something that crowdsourcing.org is a part of. And that's happening out in San Francisco this coming week. And, you know, looking at the website, crowdconf.com, you guys have a phenomenal list of speakers lined up. Can you talk a little bit about maybe the mission of the conference, some of the highlights that you expect from this year's event, and then maybe who at the conference, what speakers will be touching specifically on crowdfunding?
Okay, so let's just one quick point of clarification. So crowdsourcing.org is involved with CrowdConf as a sponsor, and we provide a media support, and we're speaking at the event and obviously running a breakout. But we're one of a number of sponsors. The primary sponsor behind CrowdConf 2011 is actually Crowdflower.
Okay.
Which is a provider of one of the most established providers of what we call cloud labor, which is they have a very large global workforce, and you can use that workforce to provide, to fulfill sort of micro tasks and expert task type of work. The conference itself first launched in October 2000 and, last year, 2010. So it's just over a year since the first event, and it was absolutely the most sort of significant event within the industry. I think an interesting thing, and it would be fascinating to see at this year's conference, where the industry has gone, but it's an incredibly viable and valuable way of sort of testing, testing where the market is in terms of its adoption. Certainly at the first conference, there were some very interesting presentations, very interesting dialogue with many of the companies that were pioneering the industry, so to speak. So it was very much a lot of the major players were talking about, their experiences. I mean, it's still very much startup. A lot of the audience were either the very early adopters within enterprises. Some of the very sort of internet or tech savvy organizations who really are the people that are the companies that are leading the charge. People from academia and research scientists, etc., that were looking at how crowdsourcing, potentially sort of integrated within an overall sort of enterprise model. So this year, I'm expecting to see more companies represented from the buy side. It'll be very interesting and a good way of calibrating where the industry is in terms of its general adoption. I know. We've got about another 30 or 40% in terms of the number of people that are registered. So we're expecting about 600 people at the event this year. There's some very interesting business and research related workshops that are being conducted on the 1st of November, which is Tuesday, followed by a full day of plenary sessions and breakouts on the Wednesday. Crowdfunding, at last year's event, it was very much around the sort of the single topic of the labor markets. But this year, the agenda has been broadened significantly. So there's definitely some very interesting discussions around crowdfunding as a model. I know a number of the major crowdfunding companies are going to be represented. I believe Grove VC have attendees there, and I know there'll be people and presentations from Indiegogo and a few of the other companies. They're also looking at the area that we call collective creativity, so how crowdsourcing is being used in the area of graphic design and creation of art, how large communities of creative talent are being engaged to work either sort of collaboratively on projects or separately on projects, but have the benefit of sharing ideas and working towards a single mission. And then obviously the labor on demand market. So there'll be a lot of discussion around how organizations are tapping into these digital workers that are available sort of globally. So a pretty packed agenda.
Absolutely. That sounds very interesting. And will there be a place for people to go and watch highlights of this or watch, video following the conference?
Yeah. So all of the sessions are going to be video recorded. So you'll be able to go back to the actual CrowdConf 2011 website and watch videos on there. But we'll also crowdsourcing.org is also taking, we're taking a team of about four or five people there, including a videographer. So we'll be doing video interviews. So if anybody is listening to this podcast, they'll be at the event and wishes to be interviewed, will be there. So we'll be hosting those on our own site as well. So I know there's a pretty big media following, and I know there'll be a lot of coverage of what goes on.
Great. Yeah, that sounds great. And I know that we're all very excited to kind of see what comes out of that conference with so many, very smart, great speakers. So it should be a good experience. So, Carl, just want to thank you very much for taking the time to share your insight with us today. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the podcast, and hopefully we'll be able to have you back sometime soon.
Okay. It's very kind of you, Brett.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Now I'd love to take the next few minutes to discuss a few updates with what's going on with Grove VC. If you've been following our blog, you will have noticed the beta release of our network model, which allows third parties to create and run their own startup and funding networks as easily as, setting up a Facebook page or a LinkedIn group and adding a ton of functionality to the way your group does work. So we're currently working with more than 40 pilot partners representing different startup, investment, and incubator organizations, and also universities and local business networks. So the application for this is very widespread, and a lot of different groups of people can find a lot of value in this. So head over to grovc.com for that, and if you're interested, you can sign up and be part of the beta program. One more thing to look out for, as we mentioned in the interview, We're going to have a few members of our team out at CrowdConf 2011. So if you're going to be in the San Francisco area, go ahead and drop us a line at info@growvc.com. We'll get back to you, and we'd love to meet up, you know, and meet new people. So with that, I will be concluding this episode of the Grow VC, Everyone Funding Startups podcast. It's great to be on board. You know, I really enjoyed this. And again, we'd like to thank Carl for coming on and sharing his insight with us. And remind you to stay tuned as we have many great guests in the future. So thanks a lot for listening.